rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session.
Yes.
Judge Bjorkman, Judge Johnson, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Louise Dovery Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. The next matter on our calendar for oral argument today is the State of Minnesota versus DeRoche and Gordon. Council, we are conducting this through interactive video, and I think we have seen both of you. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your arguments. And you will each have 15 minutes. Councilor Appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And so we will hear first from Counsel for Appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court of Counsel. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. My name is Chad Larson. I'm the Douglas County Attorney. I represent the appellants in this case. In roughly the course of 20 years, I've only filed one other appeal, so please forgive me if I'm a little rusty on this side of the equation. If you peel away all the related issues, the core of this case asks very important question. Under what circumstances may a law enforcement officer ask a driver to accompany them to the front seat of a squad car to process a legitimate stop? Now, the district court's legal conclusion was that it was improper for this trooper to ask this driver to sit in the front of his squad car while he was looking for his proof of insurance on his phone. And this is very important, this occurred before the trooper could complete his duties concerning the purpose of the stop. And those duties that arise from a motor vehicle stop, including did he have proof of insurance? Were there any warrants for the driver? Was the vehicle registered? Was it stolen? Did the driver have a valid driver's license? And he still needed to process either a citation or a warning for the busted windshield, which was the purpose of the stop itself.
But couldn't the trooper have done all of those things while Mr. DeRoche stayed in his own vehicle? The trooper often goes back to the squad car, runs the record check, gets all that information. Why the need, or why is it appropriate to bring the driver into the squad car?
Well, in this particular case, the trooper was standing outside on the interstate where the cars going past him at highway speeds or interstate speeds. The driver said that he had proof of insurance, but he was unable to get it on his phone. It wasn't a safety concern, and the state concedes that, but he asked the driver to accompany him back to his squad car so he could process both whether the man had proof of insurance, his squad computer was right there, and it was for the convenience of both parties.
Now, officer convenience was an issue in the Askaruth case, and the Supreme Court in that case seemed to take a dim view of that rationale for removing a person from his or her own vehicle and taking him back to a squad car. So how does that affect our analysis?
But Mr. Larson, Askaruth did address that in some more detail factually, and complimented the officer for the officer's honesty. But apparently, in that case, whenever the officer indicated whenever there is no driver's license, he routinely has the person come into his squad car, and so the court basically found and admitted that was for his convenience. But the point being is that the pat search did not seem to be an important factor either to the officer and or to the court, but the fact that he could have found the same information without bringing the individual to the car. And so I'm assuming you're agreeing that in this case the officer could have but just chose not to.
Well,
And so would you, just to clarify then, would you agree that the expansion did occur at the point he asked him to step out of the truck and join him in his squad car?
Yes. We can see that that was an expansion.
Are you aware of any other case law with similar facts, similar to this case, similar to Askaruth, in which a stop was expanded at the point when an officer asked someone to exit the vehicle and come sit in a squad car?
I don't believe that there is case law on that directly on point, Your Honor. And that's the thrust here is it unreasonable to have an order to sit in one seat in a squad car while an officer processes the protocol to stop? I'll be very candid with this court. One of the reasons that I filed this appeal is because this is not an uncommon practice for law enforcement in Minnesota. And I do believe that I not only have an interest in representing law enforcement officers involved in this case, but I don't work for State Patrol. I'm out there to serve the rest of the citizens of Minnesota. And I think that this needs to be directly addressed. I think that there needs to be clarification on what an officer can and can't do, because I do believe that there are specific agencies in Minnesota that are instructing their officers under certain circumstances to invite motorists back to the squad car while they process these requests. And there frankly doesn't seem to be a whole lot of case law, one way or the other, which provides officers with a lot of guidance on that particular issue. I understand that Askaruth says, at least from a law enforcement perspective, hey, you can't handcuff them, you can't detain them, you can't put them back to the squad car, but there really isn't a lot of guidance on just having a motorist simply come back to the squad car while they process either a citation or a warning and simply get basic information from the motorist, which the motorist is required to provide.
Isn't there some element, though, of, I don't know if it's coercion, but uncomfortability, if nothing else, in leaving your own vehicle and going to sit in a law enforcement vehicle? It seems to me that's a different place. If the driver here had stayed in his truck while trying to get proof of insurance at the time the trooper went back and ran the records check on the squad computer, that would be much less coercive and intrusive than having the driver go back into the squad car, whether it's in the front or the back seat.
And I would agree with that. There is some level of uncomfortableness for many motorists. But I think if you watch the squad video in this particular case, the trooper was very non-confrontative and just simply said, you know, while he's looking up the proof of insurance on his phone, why don't you just come back and have a seat with me in the car? I don't think that it can be fairly described as a trooper was being intimidating in any manner. It was simply a matter of both convenience for the trooper as well as the passenger.
Mr. Larson, I just want to read you a line from the Askaruth case. The court says, nevertheless, we conclude that the lack of a driver's license by itself is not a reasonable basis for confining a driver in a squad car's locked back seat when the driver is stopped for a minor traffic offense. And the question I have for you, is that not direction enough for law enforcement from that point forward? So in this case, as I understand it factually, a cracked windshield and arguably waiting for a few moments while he searched on his phone would have been the reason the officer asked him to sit in his car. Is it important to our analysis that the court made some conclusions based on the observations of the trooper starting from when he first saw the vehicle and found that they were improper, in terms of criminal suspicion, and therefore the court did look back at all of those, and all of that preceded the trooper asking him to sit in the car. So in other words, the court, in effect, ruled out about two or three or four factual items that were in the trooper's mind when the trooper asked him to go to his car that were improper in terms of a Terry basis. Is that important in the analysis we use in reviewing the court's decision?
There's an objective legal basis for it. In its omnibus order, the district court appears to punish the trooper for noting the factors that drew his attention to the vehicle. And then the court ascribed those factors to the trooper's subjective intentions and concluded that the trooper decided to expand the scope of the stop before he even stopped the vehicle. And there's simply no way that the district court could come to such a conclusion without undertaking an extensive analysis that it has with the trooper's subjective intent, and that's just what the court did in this case. It literally faulted the trooper for detailing the reasons why the vehicle was stopped in the first place, and then it acknowledged that the stop itself was constitutionally legitimate.
Mr. Larson?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Mr. Larson?
Yes.
We've lost you on the video.
Oh.
Yes, we have. I think we've gone to the other courtroom. So why don't you keep talking and perhaps we will get you in vision. Sometimes that's how it works.
Okay.
It's a voice-activated camera, so it helps to talk for 5 or 10 seconds.
Is there a difference between having someone exit the vehicle and stand by the side of the road and placing that person into a squad car? Assuming that there is a reason to expand the stop, and here, let's say for the sake of argument, there was because there was no proof of insurance provided when asked. But is there a difference between getting out of your own car and walking back and entering a squad car?
And the factors that are present at the time of the stop. In this case, there are vehicles speeding by the side of the interstate going 70 plus miles an hour. And so I think it would be problematic for the trooper to ask the driver simply to step out of the vehicle for safety purposes.
Wait, Mr. Larson, would you agree that at the moment when the trooper asked the driver, DeRoche, to exit the vehicle, he did not at that point have reasonable suspicion of drug activity?
I would completely agree with that, Your Honor. He did not at that point in time.
And go ahead.
I believe that his testimony, the trooper's testimony at the omnibus hearing, bears that out, in that he testified as to what drew his attention to this through several things with which the court ascribed to the trooper already deciding what he was going to do after he stopped the vehicle. And I don't want to say the judge is being unfair, but this is a drug interdiction canine officer. And so certain things are going to stand out in his mind that a layperson wouldn't pick up upon. For example, if I'm driving on the interstate and a car goes by me and it's neon orange, it's going to stand out to me. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with driving a neon orange car. To a drug interdiction officer, when there's a camper in winter, that's going to draw his attention. It doesn't mean there's anything illegal about driving a camper in the winter. And as the respondents will certainly point out, there are other campers on the interstate in the winter, but it's nonetheless it's something that draws his attention. But I'm not arguing that for any reason the officer had a reasonable, articulable suspicion at that point in time to believe that the respondents were smuggling drugs.
So I get the sense, and speaking only for myself here, that at that moment in time, the officer probably had a hunch, but not reasonable suspicion of drug activity. He had some indications that he wanted to follow up on, and I think as it happened, by bringing DeRoche, the driver, to the squad car, separating the two men, that facilitated his further gathering of facts, which kind of led to reasonable suspicion, right? I mean, the fact that the two men were separated and then he had a chance to talk to them individually, find out that their stories contradicted each other, that was significant, correct?
It was significant. I don't know that I necessarily agree with the conclusion that the trooper had already formed a hunch or a belief that they were involved in drug activity. I think that at that point in time was to simply process the nature of the reason for the stop, which is the broken windshield, and to do its duty in terms of ascertaining whether the motorist had proof of insurance. I don't think that he was free to simply let him leave at that point.
But he did take special note of the fact that there was a camper in wintertime. He found that odd, and as you said, he's a drug interdiction officer. I guess the way I read the record, and it seems likely to me that he had some suspicions, but not yet a reasonable suspicion. And I guess you agree with me on that particular point. But I go ahead.
All right, counsel, I'm going to cut you off there. You're a couple of minutes over your time. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll turn now to the respondent's argument.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Hillary Parsons. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Alexander Gordon. I'm here with co-counsel Paul Applebaum. I always confuse that, my mistake.
Just so I understand, are you both presenting arguments, or are you the person providing all of the argument on behalf of respondents?
We're going to split. I just want to make a couple of points, and then co-counsel will make a couple.
All right. As long as it's all within the 15 minutes, that's fine with us. Thank you.
Mr. DeRoche to sit in the back of this or front of this squad car was anything other than a seizure. We all acknowledge that at that point he just had a hunch. Furthermore, the state agrees that reasonableness is fact specific, and that doesn't provide this court any basis to overturn the very fact specific order from the district courts. This judge knew he was going to be appealed. He went through this point by point, examining every fact that had been observed by this trooper and making a determination that it did not objectively support the seizure at the point when he sees Mr. DeRoche.
Ms. Parsons, Do you see a is there a distinction in your mind from the fact that he was had a seat in the front of the squad car as opposed to the back, which in Askeruth they really focused on the fact it was backed, it was locked, he couldn't get out, and that sort of factual difference?
Well, wasn't there additional information that became aware that the trooper became aware of after the traffic stop, namely the lack of any evidence that this car had required insurance? Didn't that provide additional reasonable suspicion to, in fact, expand the stop by asking your client to get out of the car?
I don't believe that looking for insurance in the front of the squad car.
That's not my question. I'm trying to figure out, first of all, do you agree that that provided a basis to ask your client to get out of the car?
Absolutely not. He was looking for his insurance, and he provided it within a short period of time. Absolutely not. There is no case ever that I have ever found that says lack of proof of insurance justifies a seizure after a vehicle is stopped.
Well, there was a traffic stop, which is a form of a seizure, a brief investigatory seizure, and the case law says that it may be expanded in scope, which could be duration, so long as for reasons that are justified by the original purpose of the stop, which was a cracked windshield initially, but. Isn't an officer also allowed to confirm that the driver has a license, registration, and proof of insurance? Isn't that basically incorporated into the original purposes of the stop?
Absolutely, but he didn't need to ask him to step out of the vehicle and into the front of the squad car to do this. That went beyond the scope of what he can lawfully do as an officer and under the Constitution.
I think that the case law says that, we're looking at reasonableness as defined in Terry. Why was it unreasonable to ask him? For one thing, he did not have the proof of insurance ready. He was searching for it, and it was probably taking longer than usual, than the way most drivers. It seemed to take longer than it would take most drivers to find their proof of insurance. And so, are you saying the officer has to wait there indefinitely until he is done searching?
I'm not saying that. This is a very fact-specific set of circumstances. And the district court found that factually it did not support asking him to step into the squad car.
But would you agree then that the original circumstances of the stop allow the officer not just to gather information about that suspicion, but also to confirm license, registration, and insurance?
He was looking to separate these two boys so that he could question them separately to see if their stories were straight. And he didn't have a reason to do that. There was no odor of marijuana. Neither driver seemed to be intoxicated or under the influence. The only problem was that he was having problems finding his insurance, and he did so in a reasonable period of time.
Ms. Parsons, I'm just going to point out that there's a little under 9 minutes remaining in your combined time, so if you're going to be sharing the time, you might want to think about doing it now.
Well, I will share. Thank you for the honor of speaking in front of you, and I'll let co-counsel take over.
action or any inferences from those facts that could remotely be open to reinterpretation or correction. So I think that the judge's order stands on all fours very easily, and the state has not raised any mistake of law or fact that the judge made in his order. So we're getting into a detailed analysis of the facts of the stop, but I don't recall that the state has pointed out anything that he, that the judge found that was incorrect.
So, Mr. Applebaum, can I stop you there? So it seems to me like the state's argument on appeal is simply analyzes a slightly different issue from what the district court analyzed. It seems like the district court was focused on whether the officer had reasonable suspicion of drug activity at the moment of expansion, and the state on appeal is not saying that they did, but rather saying that the officer still was processing the stop given the original reasons for the stop.
Well, so if you follow that line of argument, then you have to ask, was it appropriate for the trooper in the squad car to begin asking Mr. DeRochus about his travel details? And I would make the same argument that there's no reason to expand the conversation beyond insurance at that point either, because if he didn't have any reason to discuss travel plans and itinerary and things like that, either at the side of the pickup truck or in the squad car, then the entire conversation in the squad car was inappropriate and an illegal expansion under Terry. He brought him to the squad car for the purposes of him retrieving his insurance information from his phone, which I would like to point out he found within, I want to say, seconds after he was seated in the squad car. So we're not talking about 15 minutes while the trooper is twiddling his thumbs on the side of the road.
Follow up on that. I guess I've listened to it or watched it. It's the audio really that you're referring to. I don't remember any mention of proof of insurance in the car, but is it specifically discussed between Mr. DeRoche and the officer?
No, I think what's happening, if I remember from the squad audio, is that a trooper, because with all candor, he suspects these guys are running gold, and so he wants to find out about their itinerary. That is the only possible explanation for this entire line of conversation at the side of the truck and in the squad car. There is no conversation about insurance. And in the middle of the conversation, while he's trying to look up his insurance information, the officer is questioning him in rapid form about his trip itinerary.
I understand that. I guess my question is, you said that he found his proof of insurance within seconds of getting in the squad car. I didn't hear that. Did he say so? Was there a conversation between the two saying, here it is right here, here's my proof of insurance, oh, thank you? Or is this somewhere else in the record?
If you listen to the squad video, and I don't want to tell you that I'm 100% certain of this, but I think Mr. DeRochus says, here it is, as he, I would imagine, is scrolling through his phone while he's fielding questions about his itinerary. And I think he says, the trooper says that he found it on the phone in his testimony at the suppression hearing. But if you listen to the squad audio, I believe you can hear Mr. DeRosa saying, here it is, or something to that effect. So,
But the trooper was also running a records check, correct? I mean, he was checking the computer records for warrants and licensure and all that kind of stuff, correct?
Correct, but that's not, Mr. DeRochus is not required to be present while he's doing that. He could have, if the trooper were going to process this according to the case law and the law, he would have let Mr. DeRochus sit in his vehicle, find his information, his insurance information on the cell phone. He could have gone back. We've all been stopped by officers. I have been caught. This isn't in the record, but I've been stopped many, many times, and I've never been asked to sit in a squad car while the officer ran my information. The trooper could have done all of those things and conformed to the case law if he had just let Mr. DeRocha sit in his driver's seat, get the information from the phone. He could have gone back at the same time and run everybody, looking at everybody's IDs, run them for wants and warrants, and seeing what was going on with them. and then come back to get the insurance information. Instead, and I'm maybe this is me doing too many decades of criminal defense work. Instead, what he did was he brought him back under the thinnest pretext to sit in the back, because you cannot ignore the fact that he wanted to separate these two, because he wanted to question Mr. Gordon separately from Mr. DeRocious. And this was his opportunity to do that, because he told them to stay in the squad car after he located his insurance. If I could just kind of back up for a second, I believe, it's my personal opinion, and co-counsel I think agrees with me, that the trooper had no basis to ask the questions he did even at the site of the pickup initially.
But you didn't. But you haven't argued that throughout the case, have you?
Doesn't our case law suggest, though, that some amount of general questioning about what are you doing, where are you going, is fine?
I think if it has to do with the basis for the traffic stop, if it's an equipment violation, sure. If it's a speeding case, you know, do you understand how fast the speed limit is here? Those types of things. But clearly, when you look at what he testified to about his observations pre-stop, and he's got a drug dog in his squad, he's a drug interdiction person, he's fishing for more information. I mean, they're trained on how to interdict drugs coming through the state on the highways. And so I think it's a bit disingenuous for us to ignore that. Be that as it may, he does have the right to have certain general conversations. There's no question about it. But it has to be related to the basis of the stop, and that's not what he's asking. And if you listen to the squad tape, the minute he gets to the side of that vehicle, he asks him for some, you know, driver's license and insurance, and then he starts into this, where are you guys going, and this and that, and the other thing, with no basis to believe that this was any kind of drug transportation scheme.
Well, but I thought the testimony was, in fact, he was suspicious about the nature of this camper, how it appeared, the fact it's out in winter, the driver's apparent, focus on the approaching squad car out of his rearview mirror, that there was some suspicion there from the start about drug activity.
And so I guess the trial court was careful to say, look, I can't look into what his subjective intent was at the time of the stop, because Wren, that Supreme Court case, Wren said you can't, it's just an objective analysis. All I'm doing is tying those observations pre-stop into what he did the minute he got to the side of the pickup truck, which is launching into this, things that have nothing to do with a cracked windshield or crossing a fog line or anything like that.
I have a couple more questions, if the presiding judge will allow. Thank you. A minute ago, Mr. Applebaum, you said that any conversation or discussion must be directly related to the stop itself. Is there authority for that, case law?
Well, I think there's all of the Minnesota cases that interpret Terry. I mean, every time there's an expansion of the stop, you have to have an articulable basis to expand the stop to the degree that you are. So he had to have seen something or smelled something or had one of the senses triggered when he was at the side of that vehicle in order to go into the itinerary. I've never seen a case where an officer can start questioning, citizens about where they're coming and going without a reason for it. That's just not allowed.
My other question is, Judge Schleter pointed out one difference between this case and Askaruth, the difference between the front seat and the back seat. Another difference is that in Askaruth, the officer ordered the driver out of the van, had him put his hands behind his head, and the officer did a pat-down search for weapons. That didn't happen here, correct? And doesn't that tend to make the expansion more reasonable than that in Askaruth?
Or not as bad as that in Askaruth. I guess that's the way I would look at it. That was a violation by a wide margin. This is maybe a violation by to a lesser degree, but it's still a violation of Terry and his progeny. by a wide margin. I think Askew was really an extreme case, and I don't think you can say, well, this wasn't as bad as Askew, so we're going to bless this officer's conduct.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Larson, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd just like the opportunity to just briefly address some of the facts involved in this case. Upon the trooper stopping the vehicle, which the trial court ruled was a valid stop, he asked the driver for his license and proof of insurance. The driver was identified as Respondent Ferocious. The passenger was later identified as Respondent Gordon. Ferocious was unable to provide the proof of insurance at that time. While he was looking for it, the trooper asked him where they were traveling to. And that's, I think, an important point to make, is that question is reasonably related to the stop, in that he asked him where he was driving to, where he's coming from. He didn't ask him about his family life, his employment, or anything unrelated to the fact that the driver was driving a motor vehicle. DeRoches told the trooper at that time he couldn't find his proof of insurance and said that he would try to bring it up on a cell phone. So, again, the trooper's standing there in 5-degree weather on the side of the interstate, and the driver can't find it on his phone. The trooper doesn't know how long it's going to take, quite frankly, for him to find insurance, assuming that he even had it. The trooper wasn't in a position to know either way. So we asked the driver to accompany him back to his spot. DeRoches follows him back to his spot and sits in the front seat. And again, the trooper's spot contains his computer, so he's processing the nature of the stop. He enters the driver's license into the computer, and he asks DeRoches, he continues this conversation that he started with DeRoches, and DeRoches advises him that the two had left Missoula, Montana, 6 to 7 days prior, and that they were mainly focused on just driving straight through. And it was March 2nd. And he told the trooper that they left Missoula on the 25th of February. So that's when the trooper became suspicious. And that's where his suspicions were reasonably.
Mr. Larson, you may be answering my question then. I wanted to follow up on something in your response to Judge Johnson's question earlier. When the trooper asked him to step out of the car, you agreed there was neither a hunch nor articulable suspicion of criminal activity, if I understood correctly. So to clarify, you believe all of the evidence that supports criminal activity started when he was in the squad car, and you were just identifying some of that.
That's correct.
Okay. And would you agree, and maybe we went over this a bit when you were talking to us, that asking him to sit in the car to look at the insurance was not the only reasonable option the trooper had to find out whether there was insurance on that vehicle?
I think that certainly that the trooper didn't have to request the driver to step out of the vehicle. That wasn't his only option. But I don't think it was an unreasonable request under the circumstances of this particular stop. I would like to finally just hit on one issue that I saw in the respondent's brief. The respondents argued that although the court never came right out and stated it, the trooper was incredible. So I guess I'm not familiar with any authority which requires this court to read between the lines to ascertain district court's intent thought processes, but the respondents are trying to spin this case into a factual dispute where no facts are in dispute. Everything is on video. That video was an exhibit at the omnibus, as I understand it. You've seen it. And the court, when analyzing the trooper's subjective intent before the stop even occurred, weighed in on whether, say, the vehicle crossed the line. And if you look at the video, there's simply no way you can really see one way or the other definitively whether the vehicle did or did not. And the trooper believed that it was moving and that it did cross the line. The district court also weighed in on whether the driver's hand gestures were significant, whether the trooper's characterization of the driver's attention was important. These are things that are interesting, but have no bearing on whether the trooper had an objective basis for the stop, because of the stop simply isn't the issue for the court. So I would simply ask that the court reverse the district court on the issue.
I have one more question. That has to do with, you've mentioned a couple times, I think, the fact that the temperature was 5 degrees. The trooper never said anything about that at the hearing, I don't think. I'm just wondering what we should do with that, where if the trooper doesn't, I mean, obviously we're looking at objective, I guess where is that in the record? I should ask that first. Okay. Maybe I guess my question is, if the trooper never testified that he asked him to come back to the squad car because of the cold weather, is that something that we should consider?
All right. Thank you, counsel. Thank you all for your arguments this morning. We'll take the case under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. This is the last case on our calendar for oral arguments, so we are in recess.
All rise. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.